Hello and welcome to the WellFest podcast with me, Marty Guilfoyle, the brand new health, fitness and wellness podcast brought to you by WellFest together with presenting partners KBC. KBC are supporting communities across Ireland, bringing you tips on health and well-being as part of their sustainability actions. Partnering with leaders in health and fitness such as WellFest and the KBC Dublin Marathon, they are playing a part in creating positive experiences that can be enjoyed by all. You can log on to kbc.ie to find out more, because KBC wants you feeling well good for WellFest 2020. Now, let's dive into this week's episode. Finlay McMahon has played for a Dublin GAA with 7 All-Ireland wins under his belt, including the epic 5 in a row. He is also the brains behind Bijou 7 Fitness Club. Welcome, Finlay.
Thanks very much.
Finlay, you've spoke a lot about how sports, particularly football, has impacted your life. Can you give the listeners an overview of your journey so far?
Yeah, I've been on an incredible journey, I suppose. A lot of things that I suppose I've went through in life, a lot of people would have seen them as socially maybe negative, you know. For example, growing up in Ballymun, there's a huge negative perception of the area. Some of the reasons why are probably, you know, genuine enough in terms of the drugs and the crime issues it's had. Mm-hmm. But for me, Ballymun was a gift. It's given me the opportunity to be the person I am. And also then, you know, I suppose challenge the standards of the culture of what people kind of expect of you as a person from Ballymun. So I'm very lucky and fortunate to be able to use my sporting profile playing for Ballymun Kickers, my GAA club, and mm-hmm. also Dublin to help people. So it's great to, I'm very fortunate to have been a part of it and still a part of a team that's very successful. And as I said, that profile of being successful has helped me in my kind of social conscious journey. So I think that's kind of it in a nutshell. Like, you know, it's
how old were you when you first kicked the ball?
Well, I'd say I was about maybe between 7, 8, or 9. I probably kicked the ball off the flats, and that was just to see what my brother John was doing with his mates. I wanted to hang around with him and the cool kids. I suppose he was 7 years old or so. Typical younger brother, you're just kind of like clinging on to him. And mm-hmm. yeah, that's what, when I started kicking football, I played soccer first. And I think I started playing GAA. Paddy Christie came recruiting for kids in the schools in Ballymun at probably maybe 9 or 10. So being able to play soccer obviously had an impact on me being able to play in primary school. And mm-hmm. then when the local GAA club came recruiting, he seen a bit of energy in me.
Were you playing the two at the same time, were you?
I was, stage? Yeah.
Ah, okay.
I suppose up to the age of 14, I was playing both, and then I actually got trials for Nottingham Forest and I went over there.
No way.
Yeah, so I stopped playing for a couple of months. And
a good friend of mine, if he's listening to this now, he'll be laughing away. He's actually, you probably don't ever hear this from someone, well, he's from England, but he lives in Ireland, but he's a huge Nottingham Forest fan, which is something you don't really hear much over here.
Like, yeah, well, they were kind of quite good back then.
Like, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They were competing to try get into the Premiership when I went over, and did a lot of Irish representation over there. So there was a lot of Irish kids going over, and yeah, it was a brilliant experience. I kind of had the option of maybe going and looking at a couple of more trials, but as soon as I came back, I was just disappointed in a way, you know, delighted with the experience, but kind of missed GAA. And
yeah,
you know, when I was coming back, I was playing with soccer clubs, and you'd pay your subs and everything else, and you'd get, you know, a top for the year in your shorts and socks. And then I was going into school, and I was surrounded by the lads that were on Ballymun Kickham's team, and they were getting tracksuits, didn't have to pay subs or anything like that. And I was just like,
that looks just getting,
they're just getting looked after so much better.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Kind of, that was what Paddy Christie done for the kids in Ballymun and Glasnevin. You know, huge, you can't even put into words what he done, you know, but he's been a huge role model for us all, and certainly has impacted our lives massively, even outside of the sport. Mm-hmm. So seeing a young one of my friends at a young age walking in with an Adidas tracksuit with a Ballymun Kickham's crest on it made my decision straight away.
This is the
journey I want to take, and the GAA is very good for that, you know, and looking after young kids and giving them a pathway, I suppose.
It's interesting to hear the you said soccer would have helped with your football, you know, because you'd assume that by looking at the two sports. I know I grew up playing basketball, and a lot of people that I played basketball with actually went on to play football really, really well. I just love hearing, you know, stories about how different sports help out with other sports and that. Like, so you'd assume soccer would help, but at the same time, like, it's a completely different sport at the end of the day. So
definitely physically, because if you look at the Irish kids that go over to England, there's a couple of different traits that the Irish kids have, and there's a couple of excuses that the English clubs will use for you not to get a second contract.
Really?
Well, like, if you look at a lot of the kids I train that go over to England, generally they'll go, the club will say, you know, look, maybe it's you need to go away and physically work on yourself and get that right. And a lot of them obviously come home from because of their homesickness and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And just, it's not, the lifestyle is just not for them. They go over too young, they miss growing up as a kid and stuff like that. But then you have the kids that go over that play a bit of GAA.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a huge amount of them actually are doing okay. Like,
no way.
Because they've developed a certain cultural attitude from GAA that's helped them challenge the bad culture of soccer. You know, I'll give you an example, a really good example. A guy called James Talbot, he's the Bohemians goalkeeper right now.
Mm-hmm.
He went over and played for Southampton, and he played for Ballymun Kickhams right up until he went away, and he was got to a really decent level with them, and Sunderland actually, and not Southampton, and he just didn't like the lifestyle. Like, it just wasn't for him. He came home, started playing GAA again, and you know, started to develop a little pathway for himself,
mm-hmm.
and a certain lifestyle, and is enjoying soccer now again, and you know, he's been brilliant for Bohemians. He got brought into the Irish team as well last year. So it just shows you, kids going over a young age can be, there's so many of them that can do really well in soccer, but timing, I think, is key for them. Like, you know.
Yeah, it's great to hear somebody going over and getting a taste for, I don't know what league Sunderland were in when you would have gone over to them, but they're such a massive club. But to miss GAA and come home,
yeah,
you know, it's crazy. It's something I've never heard happen before.
He would have came home and he would have While they were on a break with you know, in the pre-season, but just before their pre-season would start, he'd play a few games. Like, it'd be crazy. Like, you're kind of saying, you're on money. Like,
yeah, you're getting paid. You know, yeah. That's the first thing that came into my head. I'm like, you're getting paid to kick this ball. Like,
so if he gets injured playing GAA, like, how does he explain that?
Yeah.
You know, so, and there's more. There's definitely more. And I suppose the Tristy League right now is filtered with a lot of players that have went over and struggled and struggled their mental health as well and came back and have been really successful.
Mm-hmm. We touched on the All-Irelands. We can come back to that in a couple of moments, but even playing a county level takes serious discipline and commitment. How have you managed for so many years, and what would you say has been like the biggest challenge you've faced to date? You know, I'm sure your body, like, how long are you playing now? Like, your body, I'm sure, has taken some hits. Like,
I'm playing on the senior team. This would be, I think, 12th or 13th season.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so
do you find the training is getting harder? Or?
Oh, yeah. I suppose, it's the physical and the kind of, I suppose, the external lifestyle things that you have going on, components that you've going on in your life has an impact then on,
mm-hmm.
I suppose the stresses of the sport, you know. So you load your body takes a load, and it depends on your game time. It depends on different managements, how they train you. It all, there's all these factors that feed into your age profile in the sport. And I've been very lucky that we've had a consistent management team under Jim Gavin.
Mm-hmm.
Other counties have a changeover of managers every year, so basically your physical profile can change, the training can change, and that can have an impact on the length of your career. And also the game changes, so the game is changing.
So you said it's your 12th, 13th season, you know, playing with Dublin. Have you seen like many changes in the game over that period of time? Because it's a long period of time.
Definitely, the rules have changed. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. You know, we have been, fortunately, we've been successful, and some of the rules that have been implemented have certainly, they've looked to implement them for a positive reason, obviously, but not realised that the outcome can be kind of the opposite.
Like,
example, this year we've brought in an advanced mark, and an advanced mark is for, obviously, to make the game more offensive and to make it expansive, kicking mm-hmm. the ball inside, you catch it, you basically get a free. But then it takes out the art of defending.
Yeah.
It takes out the art of actually a forward getting the ball and taking you on, and it kind of makes the game very similar to Aussie rules.
Mm-hmm.
but it slows the game down and it also makes the game more defensive. So, you know, I think, unfortunately, with the GAA, you know, they look to change the rules to make it better, but I think it should be down to the coaches to change and adapt to tactics and to make the game better. So there's been huge changes tactically. When I first, I suppose when I was kind of a couple of years into playing, I would have realised, because I would have been coaching, I would have been doing strength and conditioning in the soccer world, I would have seen how tactically the amount of work that went into it and what the players had to do. And I always kind of said to myself, that's probably the next level in GAA. That's what the GAA have to kind of look at. And I definitely have seen it getting to that level tactically over the last couple of years, whether that's management of other county teams bringing in certain tactics defensively. I suppose the big one would have been Jim McGuinness bringing in the mass defence in Donegal, where they got everybody behind the ball and it was just so hard to break them down. And that was probably the start of people saying, the game can't go that way. We don't want it to go that way. Let's change the rules. And unfortunately, the rules keep changing now. Like, so yeah, sometimes, depending on the stage of your career, them rules can help you.
I was going to say, you know, yeah.
They can. They can help you because I suppose I'm seen as a full back. I'm seen as probably a very aggressive defender. And with this advanced mark, you know, other teams are starting to play big forwards inside, so it probably suits me to be marking big forwards.
From a spectator watching over the last, say, 10 to 15 years, I don't know, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but the game looks a lot fitter. Like, I mean, players are bigger, you know, and like they're lasting the duration of the game like with ease, it seems, you know, and hence probably the competition now in the Dublin team. You know, you look at the Dublin team now and everyone just seems like they're in great nick, you know.
They would, yeah. It's gone to that level where it's practically professional. Like, you know, it's, you don't get paid, but you are training like a professional. Yeah. So if you there was a study done recently, actually it was only last year, and it showed that on average, I think it was GA players spend, I could be wrong in saying it's 31 or 41 hours, one of them a week. I don't know. But for me, it would be close to getting up to that 40 hours a week. So you think about that, 40 hours a week, 168 hours a week you have. 40 of them are gone from sport. 40 of them are gone probably from work. You're not left with much to live.
You got to sleep as well, man.
Yeah, and you've got sleep in that as well. So there's 8 hours practically that you'd need a day for playing sport, if not more. So you've probably got maybe two evenings a week to do, you know, stuff for you. And
what kind of training are you doing within that 40 hours? You know, obviously you're on the pitch.
Depends on the time of the season. So if it's pre-season, you're probably doing a bit more gym work to pitch work. And then as the season starts, it kind of, the ratios change. You're on the pitch a little bit more and you're just doing kind of maintenance in the gym. A lot of the players would have a really good training age, which means basically we've trained from a very young age with a professional supervising us. So you get to a point no different to, let's say, professional footballers in England. They get to a point where they're at maintenance, where they just need to do a little top up and then they're ready to go again for the season. Like, so that's key. Like, you know, that Dublin have got a really good strength and conditioning team there that are progressing these young lads coming through every year. People go, how do they produce these young lads all the time? Well, that's all the work going in behind the scenes from the ages of maybe 16, 17, and these lads doing the right gym training so that when they get to senior adult level, that they're not breaking down, the bodies are not getting injured, and they're
ready
to
go.
Exactly. Yeah.
You've obviously been part of a team for so many years, and then as an owner of a gym, you've obviously done your own individual training, where it involves, you know, Philly, you go in by yourself and you do your own training. It's just literally you, and whether it's the weights, the treadmill, whatever you do. I used to play basketball, but recently I gave it up 5 or 6 years ago and went down the route of training by myself. But I've gone back to basketball and I realized that nothing beats playing on a team. You know, this is nothing to do. This is nothing against the gym. I love going to the gym. I really, really do. But what has it been for you that's been, you know, the best part of being part of a team?
That's interesting. It's quite interesting you said that, because my gym is predominantly a class based gym. So it's about a community, it's about a team.
And has that been like since you set it up? That's been the idea behind it.
About 11 years ago I set my company up, and it's always been about class based gyms, and it's always
and is that to do with being part of a team? Is that the whole idea behind it?
Yeah. Like, I mean, the market, when you look at the market, you see you know, just mainstream gyms, and there's people that go in and basically pay a membership to rent a space. That's essentially what you're doing. You're saying, let's say, whatever gym,
big mainstream gym. You win, you pay your low cost, €29, whatever it is. And basically you're going in and say, I just want to rent your equipment. I know what I'm doing. Whereas my gym is the opposite. My gym is like, okay, I'm joining that gym because emotionally I'm, you know, there's something that I need to change. Mm-hmm. I look in the mirror naked and I don't feel good in myself, mm-hmm. and I'm going to do something about it. So there's a huge amount of people that go to mainstream gyms and try it out, and a huge amount of them just waste their membership and don't show up and don't go. And I suppose I like to think that we are the other option of them basically saying, right, okay, I'm going to pay an extra few bob, very little more, but it's going to give me the results, and mm-hmm. I'm going to actually love going to it. So from our staff team, we don't say that we sell memberships, we sell emotions. When someone walks in the door, they feel a certain way. When they mm-hmm. walk out, they should feel much better. And that's no different to a mainstream gym, but having a community spirit always, and I say 90% of the time, you are talking to somebody who's had some sort of stress throughout the day, but when you've just had the banter and the crack with everybody and you're working out at the same time, you can't beat it. So yeah, that has probably stemmed a little bit from sport, from playing for Dublin. So
Going back to when you're younger, you know, playing football in Ballymun, do you think that the element of being part of a team, you know, really helped you and, you know, helped you kind of grow up really, you know, and get through your teens to where you are now?
Well, I think the worrying thing about today's society is that we have, you know, this mental health epidemic. People are more aware of it, obviously, but it's, I still think that we're missing a beat in terms of realising that we are the antidote to helping people with depression and anxiety. We are probably a very lonely society. We think we should be the most connected society that this world has ever seen. But the problem is we keep losing our tribes. Mm-hmm. So from a very young age, you know, to having friends in primary school, can you remember five or six of them? You can remember them, but are you still friends with them?
Yeah.
Even to the extent of sitting down with your parents and being on your phone, you're constantly chopping your tribe away. Like, and if you don't play sport, well, then you probably don't have a tribe. If you don't work, you probably don't have a tribe there either. So there's a lot of people in this country very vulnerable. I guarantee you, if you don't have a tribe, you are in a lonely place. And it doesn't mean that you don't speak to anybody. Mm-hmm. You can still be lonely. You know, so for me, having a tribe and another option in terms of in the gym industry is key.
Yeah, I completely get where you're coming from as well, because we were talking about this actually the other day. It's like, when can you remember the last time that you sat down and ate a meal and didn't look at something while you were eating? You know, whether it's a phone, a TV, you know, and it's crazy. It really is. It's gotten to that stage where you could be chatting in inverted commas to 20 people at one time online, but you might not actually talk to a person in 2 or 3 days. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's crazy. It really, really is. Let's talk about your book, The Power of Choice. Great success. Congratulations on that one. And in it, mindset is something you really focus on. What's your approach to mindset now, and how has it changed over time? If it's changed, that is.
Yeah, it constantly changes for me, and it's based around experience and education. So I believe everybody has their own mindset. You know, we have our own personality and we have mm-hmm. our own mindset, and we can spot them a mile away. Like, you know, you can spot mine a mile away if you talk to my tribes, whether it be sport or my staff or my family. I'd come across, you know, my personality would be probably forceful, you know, someone that wants to get stuff done all the time, you know. But I have to look at other areas in terms of growth, in terms of being logic, in terms of being empathetic to people and how we treat people and stuff like that. So I would have a bit of that side to me in terms of my personality as well. But in terms of if you'd ask me what's my mindset in relation to all the components in my life, my mindset is all about the opportunity, you know, realising that there's some opportunity in everything, like, mm-hmm. you know. So being open to that, having growth mindset and being open to that is key. So yeah, and also it's also how you treat people as well. So understanding why you are who you are and what values you have and what you've gained from you know, very young age. I'll give you a story. Mm-hmm. I have a program in Mountjoy that I work on for prisoners. It's a titleless leadership program. Even actually having something like the leadership program in Mountjoy prison is bad, because these lads are like, leadership, I don't want to be a leader. That means I'm leader of a gang or something like that, you know? So they have different meanings and values. So we set up a titleless leadership program, and there was one guy, we were looking at a thing called transaction analysis, which basically is how do you treat yourself, how do you treat others, right? So generally, when you're not okay with yourself and you're not okay with others, you if you looked at Mountjoy, for example, a lot of the prisoners in there are not okay with themselves, are not okay with others, okay, from maybe some sort of environmental, social issue at a very young age, childhood trauma, maybe their background, maybe them seeing something, maybe them getting involved in the wrong group of people. So there was one guy who I asked to take a class. I said, you know, I'm going to give you a bit of accountability here, take that class. And he took it, and one of the guys was getting the exercise wrong, and he started giving out to him. And the other guy was only trying to do something the best of his ability, and he then was trying to help someone else do the exercise, but actually was doing it wrong. So he was showing somebody to do the exercise wrong. So yeah, two people were doing it wrong. And he came over and communicated probably negatively, and was like, no, this is the way you do it, this way you do it. So the interesting thing was that, you know, when you look at someone like him, and I was like, okay, why is he like that? What values makes him be so controlling?
Yeah.
So very young age, he was the primary financial care of the family. Like, you know, he went out and stole for the family, which led him to eventually robbing banks, became a drug addict, and got to a point where he always wanted to control. So I set the two of them down, and I said to him, you got to realise this is coming from a good place. He wants you to do the best workout. He just hasn't communicated it right with you.
Yeah, which is very true from the story you've told us. Yeah.
And then the other guy was like, okay, that makes sense, actually. And actually, the reason why you were rebelled back, or you reacted back negatively, is because the area you're from, that's where you've been educated.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're from Ballymun, let's say, there's a good chance, because when someone came, maybe, or, you know, there's a bit of trouble, that you'd have to back yourself up, you know. So when someone challenges you, you don't respond the right way. You react, and you kind of jump on the fight or flight response. Generally, it's fight, you know. So I'm trying to get these guys to understand the difference between reacting and responding.
Mm-hmm.
So we do ice baths. So we stick them in ice baths, and we basically do, we try to get them to control their breathing as quick as possible, which is
represented. Some of these have probably never had an ice bath in their life.
No, definitely not in sporting terms in any way. But we, in the yard, in the prison, we have a big, massive tub, and they jump in the ice, and the idea is that they're developing their stress coping mechanism. So when somebody confronts them in the prison, breathe, take it easy, and just, and you know, realise where the situation is coming from. So educating them on that gives them skills to be able to not follow the norms in prison of someone confronts you, fight back.
Yeah.
Why are they thinking that way? Why are they acting that way? What's their values? Is it them that have an issue? Because, you know, prison's a strange place, you know. It's a mental health institute. That's what it is.
Yeah,
these people have underlying issues and they're struggling. So if you want to learn about people, go to Mountjoy Prison. Yeah.
And are you dealing with the same people when you go in? Is that the...
Yeah, we would have... hopefully my mum's not going to listen to this, but I'd say the name of the movement we've created. It's called the Unfucked Movement.
Okay.
So it's spelled UNFUCCCKED.
Okay.
The three C's stand for Culture, Change, Community.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're doing is we're trying to change the individual, get them to understand why they've done certain things, develop leadership skills within them, and that should ultimately change the community of the prison and the culture of the prison, which is already happening. There's really good stuff happening in Mountjoy, and I can't just hold my hand up to that group just being the sole thing. But when they then get reintegrated into society, that they do the same in their communities, they become leaders. Why is it important to help people in prison that have made really bad mistakes and committed really bad crimes? Well, these people can potentially help the next generation. You know, they can show the bad things they've done, the experiences, to the next generation, so they can save kids' lives.
Yeah, and prevent younger people from getting into the same situations themselves, really. Yeah. You talked about your gym there, BDU7. It's something that a lot of people, especially this day and age, you know, the way fitness is and food, it's in everyone's face, you know. You could talk to a lot of teenage lads and girls too and go, what do you want to do when you're older? And they want to be a PT, they want to own a gym. Was this something that you thought about when you were younger, that you thought you were ever going to do? Because, you know, if you grew up playing football, I presume your life was just completely football during your teenage years. So at what point did you go, hey, let's open a gym, let's start changing people's lives?
I suppose I was always keen on kind of, I was the sponge in terms of looking at the strength and conditioning coach. That was, and I'd look at their exercise and go, oh, that's cool, I'm going to do that. And then, so I was always keen in the fitness industry.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd ask me, was it my dream to set up my own company? Definitely not.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you how I set up my gym. It was by opportunity. I went back, finished school at 17. Mm-hmm. I finished my leaving cert at 17. Wasn't very academic. Probably got about 250 points in my leaving cert. You know, just keep the parents happy. I'm going to go to do a PLT course in Cosh Eda. And it was brilliant. Loved it. It was a brilliant, it was probably the best decision I ever made in terms of my education, because mm-hmm. it bridged my maturity.
And what's your study?
I studied health and related fitness. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't ready for university. I didn't want to go and do a trade, which is I think is brilliant as well for people. So I went and said, right, okay, this will give me two years of breathing space to think of what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Not realising that actually I was going to go into that industry. Like, I was just doing it to tick the box. So in my first year, I loved it. And one of the teachers came in and said, would you be interested in a bit of part-time work in a gym in Malahide? And I said, yeah, I'd love it. So I went out, started working out there, and I was a lifeguard. So I was kind of going to college, let's say the worst part of it was I was, let's say, going swimming at 8 o'clock in the morning, doing swimming lessons,
mm-hmm.
or basically doing lifeguard lessons and stuff like that. And then I'd have to go to work at about, let's say, 2:30 after college, and I was just wrecked. I was sitting at a heated swimming pool all day, falling asleep.
And you're literally, like, oh, you're only 18, 19 years of age here.
Yeah, so I'm very young, but it was brilliant. But I got to the stage where I was getting on the Dublin 21s, and mm-hmm. I said, no, I need to change. I need to get somewhere local. So I spoke to a friend of mine who got me a job in Northwood for Ben Dunn, and it was great. It was local. But then I went to the manager in Northwood, and I said, look, I'm getting on the senior team here. Is there any chance you could, you know, help me with training? Like, you know, I still need money. I need to work.
Yeah.
And he said, no.
Really?
Like, all right, fair enough. So I said, that's my decision. I have to get out here. So I got a job in DCU.
Straight up no, didn't
he? Yeah, like, I said, no. Like, no, it's not what we do. Like,
yeah.
You know? I'll go back to kind of the things that I suppose the reason why I set up my company. So I went to DCU and worked in the gym. They were very accommodating. They were brilliant. And I was surrounded by students. And remember, Ballymun-Kickhams is two communities. It's Glasnevin and Ballymun. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the Glasnevin kids were going to university. They were talking about leaving cert points. Ballymun lads weren't. So there was a couple of things feeding into me that I kind of was giving me that little bit of a motivation to go and do a degree. And I suppose the icing on the cake was actually, you know, being in DCU, working there and being around students. And I went and spoke to a couple of people, Paddy Christie being one, Ian Robertson, mm-hmm. and Niall Miner, who was a professor in DCU. And I said, look, I want to do repeat my leaving cert. I want to go back to DCU. And they said, look, you have to repeat your leaving cert. Went back, repeat my leaving cert. And at that time, I did an Audi A4. I got from working, like, you know, got a loan out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd only paid like a year off or something like that. And I was like, right, if I'm going to repeat my leaving cert, I'm going to do this 100%. I'm going to leave work. I'm going to give it 100% and go mm-hmm. back and study. And I said that to the parents. They said they'd support me. I didn't want to over rely on my parents because they'd done a huge amount for me throughout my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what? I'm going to do this, and I'm going to persevere any suffering, any kind of, you know, pain I'm getting from, you know, doing this. Like, so I was going to college in an Audi A4. Mm-hmm. I'd living off, I was at €2 a day. I'd buy a long pan and a packet of ham, and to make me sandwiches for the week. And I was driving in an Audi A4, and these students were looking at me going, geez, he must be loaded, a drug dealer, or he must be a teacher, he's a little bit older than us. What's going on here? So what happened then
I can see that too, because when I was doing my leaving cert, I was working in a cafe, and I saved up a lot of money to buy a Fiat Cinquecento, which is, for anyone who doesn't know what a Fiat Cinquecento is, it's literally a washing machine on wheels. Like, I could barely fit in it given the height that I am. And even with that car, students were like, oh, who does this lad think he is driving to school? Like, you know, so I can only imagine in an Audi.
So I couldn't sell the car because I'd lose so much. But what happened next was then, because I was starting to get on the senior team, a guy from a GA club in Sylvester's in Malahide came to me and said, would you train me team? I said, yeah. He says, have you got a gym? I said, yeah, I have a gym. I hadn't got a gym. He says, how much would you charge? I said, €60 a session. Just plucked that out of my head. Like, and So I used the attic space in Ballymunkickums.
Oh, okay.
And started training his team. Mm-hmm. A couple of parents seeing that, parents that were up in Ballymunkickums with their kids seeing that, started training them. I went from that to 11 years of a business, and we've grown from a 2,000 to 2,500 square foot attic space to an 8,000 square foot unit. So
amazing.
It's been a brilliant journey.
And what was in the attic that you were able to use at the time?
Absolutely nothing. All bodyweight stuff we did.
Yeah.
It was great that they were under 16 because that gave me the excuse that we weren't.
Oh, you can't weightlift. No.
Yeah. As if we had any.
No,
weights.
We would love to invest in the weight. They're under 16.
Yeah, there was a little bit there from the senior Ballymunkickham senior team. We're doing a little bit, you know, in the attic space. The real old plates and a couple of bars, but real basic stuff, and it was just an open space. So
To this day, what's been the most rewarding part about owning a gym? You know, I'm sure you get great job satisfaction and seeing people achieve their goals and stuff. Has anything stood out in the time that you've owned it?
Well, there's times you'd walk into the gym and you'd look at the gym packed and you'd be like, oh my god, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm a part of creating this. But ultimately, I suppose when you hear people's lives changing, and you know, that's cliche thing that you hear in the industry, I changed someone's life and it's been amazing, but I've got a huge range of members in my gym, and we are very inclusive, and we're not about, there's no, you know, you're just people that have bad days, you know, but that happens everywhere. But for me, we have a tribe, like, and it's been amazing, and it's been very supportive. And you know, unfortunately, we've had, let's say, for example, we've had members who've had loved ones who have passed. Mm-hmm. And we're having a little day on Friday for a member who, a daughter, passed away, unfortunately, to cancer. We're having that this Friday, and they did little things. Like, it's not really about the KPIs and what we're kind of achieving business-wise. It's what you're doing, what you're giving to people emotionally.
I can't
incredible.
Think of any gym that I've been in that has done anything like that, you know?
Yeah, well, that's when you ask what is the USP for BDU7, mm-hmm. it's the people.
Yeah.
The people are incredible, and I'm very lucky to have the members and the staff I have.
Everything we've touched on so far in this conversation, like, just shows how disciplined you are, like, you know, from even at a young age going across the trials from Nottingham Forest to your outstanding GAA career to writing a book, the gym, owning the whole lot. It's, you know, if anyone's listening to us right now and they're kind of like, look, Philly, like, I struggle with setting goals and staying disciplined, you know, what would you tell that person?
Oh god, that's a good question.
It's tough this day. Yeah. Like, there's so many distractions out there.
Well, it's a tough question to answer because there's so much fluffy stuff out there in terms of the self-help industry. Like, it can be very toxic, and I suppose we're constantly being bombarded by this consumer culture, being more wanting more and buying more. So mm-hmm. the first thing is, people talking about setting goals in life and achieving things. We do that sometimes based on others, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's something that we have to be careful of, because ultimately we can't keep listening to this story or narrative of keep chasing positivity, you know, you won't have any pain and suffering in your life. It's not okay to be feeling negative. Mm-hmm. You know, we got to, it's paradoxical, like, you know, for me, I've been very lucky, as I said at the beginning, to get gifts and to use them gifts as opportunities. Now, they weren't always just straight playing, okay, you felt bad, an event happened, your brother was on drugs, or your brother passed away, mm-hmm. feel happy now. It's not the way it works. You know, especially from a bereavement point of view, it takes a period where you have to reflect and understand what grieving is and go through that process. But the outcome can be so positive. Mm-hmm. For example, I'm sitting in front of 30 kids yesterday speaking about my experience and John's experience and the two pathways, the different pathways we've taken. That's something positive that's come out of something that was so negative in my life and my family's life. So the key for me is, and even you talk about the fitness industry, when somebody looks in the mirror and, as I said, they feel emotionally negative from their body image, it's, you know, they go and they join a gym. That's the first step. And they want to look like a certain way. That's their vision. Mm-hmm. But they always have to be emotionally connected to the pain and suffering for it to be good. Mm-hmm. So if you're someone that has a sweet tooth and that's the reason why you're overweight, when there's a Mars bar put in front of you, you've got to be able to go, hold on, that pain and suffering I had is much greater than the feeling I'm going to get for eating this bar. Mm-hmm. So the negativity is so powerful if you use it as a motivator. And we can't keep chasing positivity because it's not attainable. We can't be positive for the rest of our lives. Mm-hmm. There's nobody in the world that can be positive for the rest of their lives. Monks, whatever, whoever you want to think, just can't happen. Like, you know, it's just not who we are psychologically and biologically. We got to understand that ultimately we are built with happiness and joy, but unfortunately our society influences our negativity factors that, you know, that ultimately creep into us. So in relation to setting goals, for me, I would always say, you know, let's say if you put it in the terms of like you're going, you hear that this saying all the time, you have a destination and, mm-hmm. you know, the steps along the way is the journey and you got to enjoy the journey and stuff like that. Or what, you know, if someone asks you, what are you going to be doing next year, Philly? What are you be going to do in business or sport? I don't know.
Yeah.
Just let it flow.
Not many of
absolutely
us do,
let
do
it flow. You know, and don't be contained based off standards that other people have set for you.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of setting goals, let it flow. Go after it, enjoy it. And when it becomes a struggle, realise that's what it's worth, mm-hmm. you know. So instead of saying, you know, what do you have to do to achieve a goal, I'd say you need to ask a question of what do I need to suffer to achieve a goal?
Yeah.
What do I need to suffer to mean, to get to something that means so much to me?
You are the second person I've heard say something like this in the last week that's really kind of drove the message home to me. Do you know who the first person was? No, I didn't hear her say it in person, but it was Taylor Swift.
Oh, we go back.
Yeah,
me and Taylor.
Are
Ballymore.
You a big Taylor Swift
yeah,
fan? Yeah.
Yeah, she's from the flats as well.
She has a documentary at the moment, and it's kind of along the lines of what you just said. You know, she spent so much of her life doing things that didn't really make her happy, but it made everyone else happy. And mm-hmm. it kind of made, you know, she was doing things to make other people clap.
Yeah,
rather than what actually makes me happy, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? So hearing, you know, herself say, hearing you say, both so successful in your individual fields, it really makes sense, you know, it really, really does. Mm-hmm. And again, like you said, with Instagram and Twitter and everything these days, it is easy to see someone else live a fantastic life, and that's an inverted commas, because it mm-hmm. can look like that and you don't know what they're going through either, like, you know.
No.
So Philly, before we let you go, we'd love to ask you to give our listeners three main takeaways before you do, based on our chat.
I suppose
the person who's listening to us right now, if you want to drive on three messages to them, you know, what are they?
Pain and suffering is inevitable.
Yeah.
Use it as a positive, so the outcome can be positive. Stop chasing positivity.
Mm-hmm.
Stop chasing it. It's not attainable. And realise that everything in life is about solving problems.
Mm-hmm.
And once you solve one problem, it opens the door to the next. And for the rest of your life, that's going to happen. So it's never going to be as easy as you think.
Mm-hmm.
So the three are probably kind of spinning off a negative vibe, but
first person to do it, and
positive.
We love it. Yeah,
the outcome
no.
can be positive.
Love it so much. So what's next for you this year? We're not going to say setting goals. We've already been that. As far as football goes, you're back training.
Football, I played Kerry 2 weeks ago, and the next day I had to get my appendix out.
No, what?
So I'm back training this week. Hopefully, get some game time for the club this weekend,
mm-hmm.
and then we're playing Donegal the week after. So we've four games left in the league.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a decent league so far. This time of the year, we previous years we probably would have struggled with fitness because we take our team holiday later in the year. So so football, in terms of where we are, it's kind of mid league, which is enjoyable. You know, you're starting to kind of hit the ground now, and your fitness levels are starting to build up. So
and everyone's doing good with the new boss.
yeah, Desi's been brilliant. I suppose he understood that we had huge amount of success of what we're doing, but he's putting his own spin on it as well, which is refreshing as well. So so it's been good, it's been interesting.
Philly, where can our listeners find you if they want to keep up to date with
any social media channels? Twitter, Instagram, I'm getting a little bit older now, so Facebook as well even, but you know, our website BDU7.
Have you any plans for TikTok yet? Have you?
I'm on TikTok actually.
Oh,
but I haven't put any videos up yet. I absolutely love it, but I just get engrossed in it.
Oh, stop.
You know,
right, yeah.
I had to be on it for about I do the thinking, I'm on it for about 10 seconds, but I'm a half an hour laughing my head off. So yeah, but I like TikTok, yeah.
Yeah. Philly McMahon, thank you so much for joining us. Everything about that chat just has me like revved up and ready to go. And whether it's go to the gym or even kick a football for the first time, I'm like, I feel like I'm ready for it.
Or listen to Taylor Swift.
Philly, thank you so much for
joining
us.
Thanks very much.
You've been listening to the Wealthfest podcast with me, Marty Guilfoyle, brought to you by KBC. See you next time.